imagine if powerful technology.
Dedicated to the promotion of individual rights as exemplified in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And my special guest today with me is Dr. Andrew Bernstein. He has been on my show several times in the past, back when I was on KCXL in Liberty, Missouri. He is a senior writer for the Ayn Rand Institute. He's written, I believe his most recent book is The Capitalist Manifesto, The Historic, Economic, and Philosophic Case for Laissez-Faire. And he's also written cliff notes for a number of Ayn Rand's works, one of which is Atlas Shrugged. And we're going to talk about Atlas Shrugged today because this is the 50th anniversary of the writing of her book. And I think many would contend that that's her greatest work. It's a novel of several hundred pages. I have not yet completed it, but I have read the cliff notes. And so we'll depend on Dr. Bernstein, Andy, if I may call him that, to discuss the book. So, Andy, are you there?
I'm here, Peter. Good to be here.
Okay, good to be here. Sorry for the and getting started. We had a little trouble with my Skype connection, so I'm simply talking on the phone.
Well, so, it's like an Atlas shrugged. You know, Atlas is shrugging. We're losing the advances of technological civilization.
Yeah, you're a little faint for me, Andy. I don't know if you can adjust the volume on your phone at all. Could you repeat what you said?
I could yell. I said it's like an Atlas shrugged. We're losing the advances of technological civilization.
Right, we are. Okay, and there's our first break. I'm sorry, but with our delay, we didn't have much time to start. So, folks, and Andy, hang on. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 15 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for bearing with me as we worked out this technical difficulty here. And Andy, thanks for your patience, too. I hope you can hear me better now. All right, good. I can hear you much better now, too. So I've got Skype up and operating, and Tom has got me set up through RBM. So, folks, thanks for tuning in. Again, my special guest is Dr. Andy Bernstein. He's with the Ayn Rand Institute. He's written a number of articles for them over several years. His latest book, I believe, is Capitalism, the Capitalistic Manifesto. I'm sorry. The Historic, Economic, and Philosophic Case for Laissez-Faire. But today we're going to talk about Ayn Rand's novel, Atlas Shrugged. And you were mentioning alluding to some of the technical difficulties that happen in her book because people stray from capitalism. So anyway, Andy, go ahead and begin wherever you'd like.
Well, your listeners haven't read Atlas Shrugged yet, then I in a certain way I envy them. They have the unrepeatable experience ahead of them of reading the intellectual and emotional experience of reading Atlas Shrugged for the first time, because in my judgment it's the greatest novel ever written. I mean, even aside from the profound philosophy that Ayn Rand dramatizes in the story, it's simply the plot structure of Atlas Shrugged is simply extraordinary. And unfortunately, I guess we can't discuss it without giving away the plot for people who haven't read the book, you know, yet for the first time. But very simply, it's the story of a man who says that he will stop the motor of the world and then proceeds to do so.
Right.
He takes out as the United States slips more and more deeply into collectivism or socialism or communism, whatever we want to call it, in protest against the growing dictatorship, the hero takes out on strike all the men, one by one, the men of the mind, the ones who are responsible for our advances, the scientists, the inventors, the entrepreneurs, the engineers who are responsible for all the advances we've seen, you know, like the automobile, the airplane, the computer, the internet, medical research, biotech, et cetera. And communism, of course, leads to collapse to start with. But as the country is sinking into dictatorship, the accelerating process of the collapse picks up because the hero has all of the thinkers that progress and advance depend upon that they're on strike. So this is the main idea in Atlas Shrugged. This is the compelling, and I think the part that this is the part that drives this is the element that drives the plot.
Right, and as you were saying that, I was thinking of people the leading entrepreneurs in our society today, people like Bill Gates and you know, we could name probably 100 others. The question I would pose rhetorically, perhaps, Andy, but you can comment on it and see if there's a parallel. To what extent are these people capitulating with collectivism nowadays, or to what extent do you see some of them you know, saying I'm not going to participate. I'm gonna take my intellectual and economic achievements, and I'm not going to fund the system that is oppressing my ability to develop them.
Well, unfortunately, I think most of the great businessmen in the United States are not real interested in philosophy, and I'm not sure they really understand the moral and the moral, political, and philosophical principles that are involved here. And to a significant degree, they do fund their own destroyers. I think the major example of that is that the universities, the humanities programs, with a few exceptions, overwhelmingly spew out anti-American, anti-capitalist ideas. They just promulgate the most vicious form of anti-capitalism to their students, and consequently into the educational system. And many leading businessmen fund the universities, which are basically hotbeds of Marxist, socialist, anti-capitalist propaganda. So that's one example. Related to that is the environmentalist movement, including its hysteria over man-made global warming, who promulgate, again, these vicious ideas. Their whole purpose is to basically take over the private sector, the American corporations, and make them, you know, under statist control. And yet again, you find any number of business people who fund the environmentalist movement, who kowtow to the environmentalist movement, who advertise themselves as being in a compliance with environmentalist programs, and you basically swallow the propaganda of Al Gore and his ilk, and give large contributions to environmentalist organizations. It's very disturbing, Peter, that the last bastions of the people who provide, who we all rational people should be enormously grateful to, entrepreneurs and businessmen and the American corporations, and yet these people who've basically solved the problem of material production, and because of whom we live have the highest living standard in history, and yet in their own ideas they're increasingly becoming more and more leftist, more and more anti-capitalist, and funding their destroyers and ours. So it's a very disturbing trend in American society.
Right. Well, I can give you an example of that, Andy, from my own university where I teach, Park University. It was announced by the president this previous semester that we were going to, quote, go green. And during a faculty meeting, she came in and she had made the announcement a little more formally and said, we are going to be climate neutral and green. And so I raised my hand and I said, could you define for me what you mean by climate neutral and green? And she proceeded to wax on about building buildings that are energy efficient and so forth like that. And I thought to myself, without responding to her, well, isn't it just good economic sense to build buildings that are efficient anyway? And then she looked at me, Andy, and here I am in front of the rest of the faculty, and she said, did I answer your question? And I found myself between a rock and a hard place. I mean, this is my boss. And I just kind of threw up my hands. I didn't want to say no because that seemed too confrontational. But what I came away from that experience with was the people that promote these ideas often, I think, do so because they do so in a blur. They don't really define ideas. It's like multiculturalism. That's a popular term at our university. And yet I've never heard anybody actually define what they mean by that term. Maybe it differs from how people use it at other universities, how you use it. I don't know, but it's very difficult to have any kind of intellectual discussion, the pros and cons of any ideas, when certain champions of those ideas just vacillate on what in the world they're talking about. Do you encounter that when you talk to people about these ideas?
Yeah, all the time in the universities. I'm in a worse position than you are because I'm in the philosophy department. You're in the math department, right?
Correct.
So in the philosophy department, it's even worse. But I think it's a clue to this is that the people who promulgate these ideas, who originate them, and who avidly support them, as opposed to the people who just uncritically sign on and go along or kowtow, are all hardcore leftists in their politics. The goal is always to attack capitalism, to destroy capitalism, to create some form of socialist system in America. And there are many different ways of doing that. The environmentalists. Remember Walter Williams, the economics professor at George
sure.
Mason, calls the environmentalists watermelons. You know, green on the outside and red on the inside.
Right. That's
very apt because you can't argue directly for socialism anymore. It's been too abysmal a failure. But you mm-hmm. could strive for socialism through the back door. That is by claiming that the profit driven private companies are polluting the hell out of the environment, or they're leading to catastrophic man-made global warming, and consequently the government needs more and more control. You need to enforce mm-hmm. Kyoto. You need to make sure that the companies and the customers basically lower their living standards, etc. And there's all different ways of trying to bring an anti-capitalism. And I think multiculturalism, the very vague term that you mentioned, attacks the foundations of capitalism from a different direction, and that is it's basically an anti-individualist mm-hmm. idea, and the idea is we're all products of our culture, that the society dominates us. Nobody is really a free thinker or independent. We're basically dominated by society, and consequently, the proper moral code is to, since society is our ruler cognitively and morally, the proper attitude we should have politically is we should all serve society. And it's just a different route to attack individualism and capitalism and to instill socialism. But that's all these vague terms that you're referring to, the goal is always from one direction or another to attack freedom, to attack individual rights, to attack individualism, to attack capitalism, to take the freest country in the world, America, and move it towards a socialist dictatorship. Notice that a lot of these people we're talking about all think Fidel Castro is a great guy. They admire Cuba. They would prefer the United States to be like the Cuban system than the semi-free capitalist system that it is.
Unbelievable. Well, can we relate? And I don't know to what degree you want to discuss the particulars of Atlas Shrugged, but I'm thinking, and as I admitted on the beginning, I have not read the entire novel, but I've read the beginning, and I've read, I think, a separate set of, I'm not sure they're called Cliff Notes, but basically a summary of them, not yours, I guess. But if I'm thinking in terms of, Taggart Railroad, and if you could look at the characters there, those that want to make the railroad run and those that sort of waffle on the sister brother there that waffle on, gee, we don't want to do this. We don't want to upset the powers that be in Washington. We want to make sure every company from whom we might buy raw materials gets a fair shake and so forth. And I just thought it might be interesting to talk about those characters a little bit in the context of what we're discussing.
Sure. The main narration of Atlas Shrugged comes through the eyes of Dagny Taggart, she's the vice president in charge of operations of Taggart Transcontinental Railroad. Now, she is your classic entrepreneurial type. She is the type of American businessman or businesswoman who is primarily responsible for the overwhelming wealth of this country. She is the Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, Edward H. Harriman, J.P. Morgan type, and in our day, the Sam Waltons and Bill Gates and Martha Stewart's and people like that who've enormously entrepreneurial. She makes Taggart Transcontinental Railroad go, and she is the spirit of individualism, of laissez-faire capitalism, of get the government out of the economy, that the government's role in human life is to protect individual rights, is to protect honest people from criminals. Other than the protection of honest people from criminals, the government, by means of a criminal justice system and a civil court system, other than that, the government has no role to play in the economy. She's the embodiment of that spirit. Mm-hmm. Her brother, James Taggart, who's the president of the railroad, he is your mixed economy type businessman. And here Ayn Rand showing us something that's historically true, and that is that many capitalists do not support capitalism. Many business people do not support capitalism. They argue for mm-hmm. all types of government intervention into the economy to benefit their business, ostensibly mm-hmm. to benefit their business, whether it's corporate bailouts for companies that can't compete on a free market, or whether it's tariffs to protect them, or quotas on foreign imports, or restrictions on foreign imports to supposedly protect domestic firms, et cetera. Jim Taggart is of that ilk. He is the guy who seeks to profit not by superb productivity and actually producing better than his competitors the goods and services that the human life requires and that the customers would prefer. He's the guy who seeks to make the company profitable to the extent that he seeks profit at all by means of use of governmental force against his competitors,
right,
to restrict the competitors that he is afraid to or unwilling to compete on a free market against. So one represents freedom. Dagny represents freedom and the right of the individual to produce in freedom and do as he will so long as he doesn't initiate force or fraud against others. The other represents the embodiment of the force of statism and the legal initiation of governmental force against honest, productive, and innocent men. So they represent two very different moral and political principles here.
Right. Well, comment, if you would, then, Andy, on the time at which he wrote this, obviously 50 years ago, and my understanding, is certainly inferior to yours, is that that was a period of time up and through the 60s, 70s, maybe up until the time of the election of Ronald Reagan, when collectivism, although it was not called that, was more in favor and then began to fall out of favor, you know, with the Reagan, the 8 years of Reagan in the White House and so forth. I guess what I'm wondering is, how would Ayn Rand see how we're running up a break here. How would she see her novel as a predictor of what's happening in America over those? And you can think about it during the break, and we'll come back here.
Okay, Peter.
If that's not clear, I'll clarify at the end. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back here with Dr. Andrew Bernstein in just a couple minutes.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Hey, welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is June 24th, 2007, and my special guest is Dr. Andrew Bernstein. and we're discussing Ayn Rand's novel, Atlas Shrugged, written 50 years ago, and its relevance to today and philosophical issues surrounding that. Let me just back up then, Andy, if I may. Ayn Rand wrote this novel in 57, and I take it to sort of wake up America about the evils of collectivism and what's going to befall the world if people don't understand the evils of collectivism and instead embrace individual rights. What I'm wondering then is, how would she react to the way things have gone in the world since that time? And as I see it, we were in a period of greater sympathy, if you will, for collectivism through the 50s and 60s up, say, until the election of Ronald Reagan. And obviously different factions within our society, for example, in universities, have always been somewhat or primarily to the left. But how do you see it? How do you think she would see it today in terms of whether we're moving more toward collectivism or away from it or different aspects of our society?
Well, just one brief preface before I answer your question, Peter. I think thematically, in terms of its ideas, I you're absolutely right. I think that Ayn Rand wrote Atlas Shrugged to some degree against collectivism in favor of individualism and capitalism, although fundamentally it was written in support of the mind, in support of the free-thinking human mind and the right of an individual to his own life. But I think first and foremost, we need to understand Atlas Shrugged's work of art. It's a magnificent work of art. It's I think if anybody were to read it objectively, I think they'd have to conclude it's one of the greatest novels ever written, whether they agreed with Ayn Rand's ideas or not. I certainly think it's the greatest novel ever written. So first and foremost, Atlas Shrugged's a magnificent work of art, and whether people agree or not, they should read the book just to appreciate what a great artwork it is. But in terms of the political issues that you're raising here, I think it's true that collectivism and socialism to a significant degree have been discredited. I think President Reagan gets some had some assistance in doing this. The main thing that has discredited socialism was, of course, the collapse of the Soviet bloc in the late 80s and the collapse of the Soviet Union itself in the late 80s and early 90s, showing the abysmal failure of socialism in practical terms. Cuba is miserably poor. North Korea is worse, etc. So collectivism has been an abysmal failure. And I don't think anybody argues in favor of Marx's point that socialism will eventually outproduce capitalism. I don't think anybody believes that anymore. But nevertheless, we're still moving towards socialism. I mean, Milton Friedman had that, who certainly was no fan of Ayn Rand, but Milton Friedman had that great line where he said, with the Democrats, you get galloping socialism, and with Republicans, you just get socialism. we're moving in that direction, drifting, crawling, in some cases running in that direction, because of the dominant moral code in our society still remains one of altruism or self-sacrifice. And as egoism is still not accepted, it's still, in many cases, a dirty word. And let me define my terms here. I don't want to be like those guys in universities you were talking about before. Altruism means that moral goodness or doing the right thing lies in sacrificing oneself for others. And at the political level, others means society as a whole. Whereas egoism is the code that endorses the need and the moral right of each individual to pursue his own values, to pursue his own life and his own happiness, and that there's no moral necessity to sacrifice for others. Indeed, it's wrong. You should not sacrifice for others. You can help others, but as a choice, you shouldn't sacrifice. and so altruism, or the self-sacrifice code, remains dominant. It's certainly dominant in the Democratic Party and on the political left through Marxism and a diluted form of Marxism. And amongst the Republicans, Christianity is very, very influential. So altruism remains dominant in both schools. And that's why we keep moving towards socialism, of which I can give many examples when we get back.
Okay, very good. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back with Dr. Andrew Bernstein in just a couple minutes.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Okay, welcome back. Talking to Andy Bernstein about Atlas Shrugged, the 50th anniversary of Ayn Rand's great novel and related philosophic ideas. You were discussing that Milton Friedman said that the Democratic Party is galloping socialism and the Republican Party is just socialism. I refer to them as socialism light, but and you were talking about some examples there. So I think we got interrupted there, Andy. Go ahead if you're
Sure. Look at the hostility towards capitalism that the altruist ethics breeds in our intellectual and political culture. So you see the endless attack on profit-driven, enormously productive private companies. Walmart is here's Exhibit A, just
sure.
An enormously productive company that has made us all significantly wealthier. But I live in the New York suburbs. There's no Walmart in New York City. Not because the New York customers don't want it. They most certainly do. They leave town all the time to shop at the Walmarts in the suburbs or out in the more rural areas. But the politicians, the city council and the mayor, who control the political life of New York City, steadfastly refuse, as a matter of moral principle, to permit Walmart to open a store in New York City. Walmart's persecuted all over the country by leftist mentalities. They can't open stores here. They can't open stores there. Instead of celebrating, an enormously productive company like that, you see the endless attacks on capitalism. The attempt to break up Microsoft is a second example. I mean, putting Martha Stewart in jail for allegedly, I mean, the charge was obstructing justice, but what triggered the whole case, of course, was the insider trading issue of selling her stock in ImClone. And by the way, Sam Waxel, who went to jail for a long time, who was the head of ImClone, basically what they did is they were manufacturing cancer-fighting drugs, and the mm-hmm. government put them in jail for the crime of basically of acting on insider information to sell their own stock. This is a crime, according to the U.S. government. For the right. past 70 or 80 years. And so, you, right. I mean, you can go on with the examples, but I think that the altruist ethics that dominates our society, politically, especially the Democrats, but also to some degree the Republicans, leads to an endless hostility because of the profit-driven, that is, egoistic nature of these privately owned companies, and consequently this persecution of the producers who Ayn Rand celebrates in Atlas Shrugged, the persecution of these productive companies that, as a consequence, makes us all much poorer.
Right, and I guess I'm thinking back to I was pretty young at the time, but Barry Goldwater was the Republican presidential nominee in 1964, and I think he was much more in favor of capitalism, perhaps even than Ronald Reagan. And you don't see anybody, with the exception of Ron Paul now, whom I support, championing capitalism and freedom and adherence to the Constitution among all the contenders of the Republican Party. And I just wonder how she would react to that. How far the Republican Party, which used to be ostensibly the party of limited government and free enterprise, capitalism, and so forth, how far it's drifted to the left. It's sort of been pulled in that direction, if you will, perhaps by the Democrats or whatever, or their failure to take a principled stand. And so what we have is, as I said before, we have socialism versus socialism-like. There's really not much choice among people that you might elect to political office in Congress or for the president.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's very sad. If you look back to American history, the Republican Party at times historically was much better than it is today. Although Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, and he was a major anti-capitalist trust buster.
Right.
But
right.
the Republican Party had people like McKinley and Calvin Coolidge. Coolidge, of course, mocked today for a long time now by the leftists for his famous line that the business of America is business.
Right.
But that's true. At least it was to a significant degree in the late 19th century when the country built itself up into the most productive and wealthiest country on earth. Coolidge understood that. He was, to a significant degree, much more laissez-faire than anybody is today. He kept the government out of the economy, and the economy grew enormously during the 1920s. He was succeeded, of course, by Hoover, also a Republican, who was an interventionist, not a laissez-faire guy, as FDR's boys pointed out later. They, as much as they mocked Hoover, the New Deal was simply built on programs that Hoover himself had initiated. But anyway, with people like McKinley and Coolidge, there was a time when the Republican Party, of course, was much more favorable to laissez-faire, or at least close to laissez-faire and freedom. Today, and Barry Goldwater, you're right, I was also very young in 64, and I fell victim. I wasn't old enough to vote, but I fell victim to LBJ's propaganda campaign against the smear campaign he ran against Barry Goldwater. But today I realize that Goldwater was the closest thing in the last 50 years we've had to somebody who actually supported individual rights and freedoms. And today the Republican Party is largely a statist party, not a pro-freedom party anymore, primarily because of the dominance of Christianity in the party, so which leads to violations of individual rights, such as anti-abortion rights and anti-gay marriage and things like that, but also because they've simply kowtowed to the multiculturalist, collectivist dogma coming from the left and from the Democratic Party. I mean, the heyday of the U.S. welfare state, which was initiated, of course, by LBJ, but the heyday of it came under Nixon in the 1970s. And John Lindsay, who turned New York City into a massive welfare state as mayor in the 1960s, was a Republican. And so the Republicans have won because of the altruist ethics that dominates their Christian roots, and two, because they simply kiss up to the left, who controls the intellectual culture, and they've simply absorbed those ideas by osmosis. They can't fight the welfare state socialist mentalities in principle because of the altruist morality they accept through religion. And so they're basically intellectually disarmed against the leftists. And like you said, they become socialists light. They you know, if the Democrats want $1 billion program to for some social issue, the Republicans will fight it on the grounds. No, not $1 billion. You know, just $950 million. You know,
right.
And so either way, either party that you turn to, you don't get any principled stand in support of individual rights and political economic freedom. The good news is, as Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism gradually spreads through American society, and I see many positive signs in that regard. When politicians are followers, they're not leaders. They go
right.
Where the votes are. When that philosophy is widespread in society, then you'll see one or other of the two parties embrace objectivism, at least embrace limited government and individual rights, and you'll start to see a move politically towards capitalism and freedom and individual rights.
Right.
But that takes a long time.
Yeah, maybe longer than we'll live, unfortunately. But let me throw out the number for folks that would like to call in. If you have any comments or questions for me or Dr. Bernstein, the call-in number is 800-313-9443. Again, that's 800-313-9443. You, of course, can email me at any time at peter@petermaxshow.com. Relating it back, if we can, to Atlas Shrugged, Andy, you were discussing egoism versus altruism, and it seems to me, and again, I admit I haven't read all through the book, so I haven't had the privilege of seeing how these characters' mindsets may change, but if you take somebody like Hank Reardon, you know, here's a person who, in the book, invents this new metal, Reardon metal, and yet he is, you know, taunted by his family, and he's sort of pulled, it seems to me, in the direction of altruism, at least with respect to his family and so forth. Can you comment on that and you know, Ayn Rand's use of these characters to display this conflict between altruism and egoism that appears or manifests itself within individual characters in the novel.
Yeah, Hank Reardon in Atlas Shrugged is Ayn Rand's example of a great businessman, an enormously productive genius who is tormented and tortured by the altruist morality. Again, he's like Dagny Taggart and like several of the other characters in Atlas Shrugged. He represents the great entrepreneurial spirit, you know, the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, and nowadays the Bill Gateses, Ed Al, who've and since, as you point out, he invents a new metal, Reardon metal, which is as superior to steel as steel was to iron. He's also captures the essence, the spirit of American inventiveness, the Thomas Edisons and the Alexander
right.
Graham Bells and the Wright brothers, people like that who were also very entrepreneurial and who made fortunes on the abundantly deserved on the advances and their inventions. So Reardon is an enormously progressive thinker in that way, you know, leading us towards great technological advance that will benefit the lives of everybody in the country, indeed, around the world. And yet, he is tortured by the altruist morality, which at the political level, you know, in several ways, the political level, the socialist rulers or the statist rulers who are leading the country towards socialism regard it, of course, as his moral obligation to serve the state. And endlessly persecute him. They steal his metal. They undermine his production. They take away various of his properties to give to needy businessmen, et cetera, based on the altruist ethics that the strong have to serve the weak and the productive have to serve the unproductive. So he's persecuted at the political level. But even worse, having grown up in such a society, he's accepted in his own life, although he's a brilliantly rational thinker in dealing with nature and with producing steel and Reardon metal, he's absorbed this irrational moral code of that virtualized and selfless service, and so he not only for most of the novel succumbs to the depredations of the status, but even worse, his family are a gang of vicious moochers who sponge off of him and believe that's his obligation to serve them, and he simply carries on his back. He willingly, instead of throwing throwing these creeps out, he willingly carries on his back all of these vicious moochers who basically torment him, and all they do is insult him. You know, they bite the hand that feeds him. And
sure.
I think a lot of readers of Atlas Shrugged relate more to Hank Reardon's struggle to free himself of this life decaying moral code of self sacrifice. They relate to that, and one of the most inspiring and uplifting moments in the story is when Reardon, one of the Atlases who carries the world on his shoulders, basically shrugs and rolls his shoulders and lets go of all of these moochers who are carrying him, he's carrying on his back, and does it guiltlessly, realizing I do not have any moral obligation to carry these people on my back. I have a need and an absolute moral right to live for my own life and my own happiness. And it's a very right. beautiful and powerful moment in Atlas Shrugged when Reardon liberates himself from the life destroying code of self sacrifice.
Right. You mentioned in your discussion of altruism is the philosophy of self-sacrifice and so forth. And I think it's interesting that people of that mindset often miss that for a person to be successful in a capitalistic society, of which ours is only partially, a person must serve human beings. That is, they must provide a product that is useful. And so Reardon, in his invention of Reardon metal, must provide that market. He must convince people this metal is superior. It's not sufficient simply to go out and say, I'm going to do this and live my life. If you're going to be economically successful, you have to convince the customers to buy your product or service. And in that regard, people provide enormous service to society, but they do it in such a way that doesn't demand them sacrificing their own lives.
Right. The Rockefellers, Carnegies, Bill Gateses, Ed Al have done vastly more for mankind than the Mother Teresas could ever dream of doing. I mean, all the Mother Teresas at best, hold the hands of people who are dying and maybe offer them some solace as they mm-hmm. die. But the great entrepreneurs we're talking about cure the diseases. I mean, that's exactly what the pharmaceutical companies do and have done. They mm-hmm. develop medications that cure diseases, and the biotech, profit-driven biotech companies are going to take that even further in our century. So you're absolutely right. And if any rational human being, after 200 years of capitalism, it should be obvious that capitalism is the system that enables millions and millions and millions, billions by this time, of people to live a much longer life, much healthier life, and at a much higher living standard. And so that the leftists continue to attack capitalism and support socialism even today makes it very clear that it's not benefit to human well-being that they're after. That's not their goal. What they're after is power. They are simply mm-hmm. after the establishment of a socialist dictatorship to dictate to you or I how we should live our lives. It's not human well-being that they care about. It's the power of the state. And so I think at this point in history it should be very clear that's what they stand for.
Right. Well, how would you compare somebody like Bill Gates to Hank Reardon? Is that a fair comparison? I mean, obviously they're both tremendous entrepreneurs in terms of their creative inventiveness and so forth. But Bill Gates has, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, I think somewhat apologized before Congress and trying to keep them from using antitrust measures against him and so forth, rather than come out and say, look, I invented this company, I invent this product, people buy it, I'm wealthy because I provide a product that people freely choose to buy, not through any political power, simply because I provide a product that people freely choose to buy. Is there any valid comparison between Reardon and Gates?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. That's well, stay question. With us, folks. We'll let Andy respond to that when we get back. Again, if you want to call in, 800-313-9443 is the toll-free number. We'll see you back in a couple minutes.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show as we approach the top of the hour here. Today is June 24th, 2007. My special guest, Dr. Andy Bernstein. We're discussing Ayn Rand's novel, Atlas Shrugged, written some 50 years ago. And I noticed, Andy, on something called The Bookman, which is a list of the 100 top novels by librarians, that Atlas Shrugged was 37th and The Fountainhead was 66th. So I'm sure there are multiple 100 best books lists out there, but on this particular one, it was 37th.
Yeah, I think at the turn of the millennium, I think they did a reader's poll on the top books of the century, and I think Atlas Shrugged was number one or number two. I can't remember.
Wow!
But it was up at the very top of the list, which is not surprising to me.
The readers
recognized more than the professors and intellectuals and librarians do what an extraordinarily important book Atlas Shrugged is.
Right.
But you. Can we get back to your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Please.
I think it was a great question to compare Bill Gates to Hank Reardon, and I think there's a definite similarity there, and at some point the similarity ends. They're both persecuted. They're both enormously productive individuals, and I think what people need to be aware of is that Ayn Rand stresses productivity as a virtue, and that is, since we don't live in the Garden of Eden, all the goods and services that human life depend on, that our very survival depend on, as well as our prosperity and rising above the survival level, depends upon human beings, especially the human mind, to solve the problems of material production, to learn how to grow food, to cure diseases, to build houses, to invent all of these labor and time saving devices. And so reading in the steel industry and like a modern day analog, Andrew Carnegie and Bill Gates in the high tech computer industry, these are enormously productive men who come up with new ideas, who know how to hire people who can put them to work, who come up with new ideas, who create wealth, and who make us all vastly wealthier. And they're both persecuted by the government. Reardon is, like I said before, was endlessly persecuted by the semi-socialists who run the U.S. government in the novel, and of course Bill Gates has been persecuted by the semi-socialists who run the government in real life with the attempt to break up Microsoft. The difference, of course, is that in the novel, Reardon comes to understand the evils of altruism and socialism, and he stands up for his rights, publicly proclaiming his right to his own life, his right to the pursuit of his own happiness, and his right to every penny of the fortune that he's abundantly earned by means of his productive work. Whereas Bill Gates, I know many objectivists, many Ayn Rand supporters sent copies of Atlas Shrugged to Bill Gates, and similarly to Martha Stewart when she was being prosecuted by the Justice Department. But neither of them really learned its lesson. Neither of them. But I think I'm pretty sure both of them are Democrats in their politics. If I remember correctly, Bill Gates was a personal friend of Bill and Hillary Clinton, and I'm pretty sure Martha Stewart was a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. And so they don't have the philosophy, and they don't have the understanding of the need for individual rights and capitalism, and neither them, they nor any other prominent business person has stood up in support of his right to his own life, the pursuit of his happiness, and the every penny of the fortune that he's earned. It would be an enormous boon for all of us, if any one of these leading businessmen, you have to comply with the law. So if the government imposes some law on you, you know, some unjust law on you, they have to go along with it. But they do not have to do it silently.
Right.
You know, they could speak out in support of their rights, and in doing so, not only protect their own rights, but of course, as a consequence, it helps protect everybody's right to his own life and to his own pursuit of his own happiness and to his right to the wealth that he creates.
Right. It's always been puzzling to me, Andy, that people like Bill Gates and Martha Stewart, and I'm less familiar with her, except for, of course, the you know, her trial and prosecution and her sentence that she served in prison, that these people embrace or support people like Hillary Clinton or the Democratic Party in general, or even the Republican Party in that sense, because of their